Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Tanitha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's workshop update on diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation. We've been collaborating together for many years now offering these programs. We also have many other organizations who are also helping to promote this program as well. And it's because of all of our work that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 473 participants, and you come from all over the United States, from all different regions and states in the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, Mexico, Syria, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it's a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you have received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's an outline that our speakers have prepared in terms of the topics they'll cover, and there also is information about our speakers and all of the different collaborating organizations, information about the Lymphoma Research Foundation, all of its resources, as well as Cancer Care. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the programs that we should be offering moving forward. Today's program is one that many of you have asked us to offer, and we're offering it, and indeed, we very much rely on your feedback so that we're offering programs that are really most relevant to meet your particular needs. This teleconference today is supported through an unrestricted educational grant to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and I really want to thank them for their support of our program today, and we really appreciate that. Now, we have wonderful speakers, and our first speaker today is Dr. John Leonard. Dr. Leonard is the Richard T. Silber Distinguished Professor of Hematology and Medical Oncology. He's Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College, Clinical Director, New York Cornell Center for Lymphoma and Myeloma, and he also is Chief Lymphoma Myeloma Service and Associate Director for Clinical Research, Weill Cornell Cancer Center. Dr. Leonard is an acknowledged expert in the field, and he is going to address diffuse large B-cell lymphoma overview. He's going to talk about staging and grading, treatment options, and the role of clinical trials. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Leonard.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn, and it's a pleasure to be here with this audience and with this excellent group of speakers, and we hope that this will be a useful program for you. So our focus today is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and while I am sure that most of the people or many of the people on the call are interested in that area, I'm sure that we have some other patients or interested groups that also are interested in other types of lymphoma. And as you know, lymphoma is complicated. Within the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, there are over 60 types of lymphoma. Most of those are what we call B-cell lymphomas. And within the B-cell types of lymphomas, I tend to consider lymphomas in three kind of big categories, one being the indolent or slow-growing or chronic types of lymphoma, one being the more aggressive type of lymphoma, and then the third group being kind of an other group, which is comprised of a number of different types of lymphoma, some of which act like the indolent type, some of which act like the aggressive type. So what we're focusing on today is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is the most common type of lymphoma overall. About 30% of patients with lymphoma have diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So it's a minority of patients overall because there are so many different types, but it's actually the most common category of lymphoma. Again, about 30% of patients diagnosed with lymphoma have diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is the most common of the aggressive lymphomas. And so like many things in life, like many types of lymphoma, when one has a diagnosis of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, there are good things about it and there are bad things about it. And those of you who are dealing with other types of lymphoma may recognize that other types of lymphoma may have different things about them, different features that are either good or bad. And depending on your perspective, you may have a different feeling about that. Generally speaking, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is a curable type of lymphoma. So that is the good news, is that there are many people dealing with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that go through a course of treatment, and we'll talk about treatment in a minute. They go through the course of treatment, and they may be cured, meaning the disease responds to the treatment, it goes into remission and doesn't come back, and one can live a very normal life subsequently. On the other hand, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma needs treatment right away. And so in some ways, for some people, that's the bad news, in that certain types of lymphomas, particularly many of the indolent or slow-growing lymphomas, don't need any treatment. And so patients can often be managed or be observed without treatment, which for some people is good news. In diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, we don't do that. If the lymphoma is there, it will progress without treatment, and the patient ultimately will get sicker. And so diffuse large B-cell lymphoma patients do need treatment. And so in some ways, that's the bad news. The good news is that often the treatment can be very effective. I think the other thing with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is that there tend to be two categories of patients, and you don't always know where you start at the beginning, but the category of patients that are cured of the lymphoma with treatment often are in a good situation after treatment for obvious reasons. You're able to get rid of the lymphoma and go on with things. On the other hand, if you are not able to cure diffuse large cell lymphoma, meaning it is resistant to the treatment or it comes back, then it can be very challenging. And in many cases, if the disease comes back, in some cases it can still be cured, but in others, the lymphoma gets worse, and unfortunately some people die of diffuse large cell lymphoma. And so it is kind of a double-edged sword where things can go in different directions, and that's why we're very, very focused on doing our best to give the patient the best chance of being cured with the treatment. And we'll talk again about that in just a minute. So in general, most patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma have what we call advanced stage disease, meaning that the lymphomas are in many different places. Sometimes patients present with a lymphoma in one lymph node area, which would be stage 1. Sometimes it's in a couple of lymph node areas, which may be stage 2. But most of the time, it's in several different areas of the body, which would make it either stage 3 or 4. And as many of you know, lymphoma, the staging, meaning where did it spread, is less of an issue. It's an important issue, but kind of a minor issue in the scheme of things, compared to things like breast cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer as examples, where the stage of the disease, meaning how far did it spread, is the crucial thing in defining the prognosis and treatment. In lymphomas in general, including diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the treatment and the prognosis is not so much affected by the stage. It's affected a little bit for some people, but since most people have it in many different places, i.e. stage 3 or 4, it's not the big factor. The big factor is what type of lymphoma you're dealing with. And again, in this case, we're dealing with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And knowing that this entity or the diagnosis is this category versus another category can be very important in determining the prognosis and the course of treatment for a patient. So this is an aggressive lymphoma. And again, that sounds scary to some people. And the aggressive lymphomas just reflect the fact that if you don't treat the lymphoma, it tends to get worse, so you need to treat it. And hopefully you can cure it, which is the good news of that. And so people ask about the grade of lymphoma, and that's not a term that we use so much in diffuse large cell lymphoma, other than to say that this is an aggressive type of lymphoma that needs treatment and, again, often can respond to the treatment. So how do we treat patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma? Well, the most common form of treatment for patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is an outpatient form of chemotherapy called CHOP, C-H-O-P, plus rituximab, or Rituxan, which is a monoclonal antibody treatment. So basically, CHOP chemotherapy, and CHOP stands for four drugs, cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, vincristine, and prednisone. And typically, each letter in some of these regimens stands for a different drug, but unfortunately, the names of the drugs have changed over the years, so the letter doesn't always stand for the first letter of the drug, unfortunately, so it makes it a little confusing. But this is an outpatient treatment regimen, three medicines given in the vein and one given by mouth called prednisone, and these medications are given every 3 weeks, usually for six treatments. So it works out to be about 4 months of treatment. And then with each infusion, with each treatment, the patient gets an infusion of rituximab. And rituximab is what's called a monoclonal antibody treatment. These are immune proteins. Many patients with B-cell lymphomas, which are the broad common category of lymphomas, get treated with rituximab. This is an antibody treatment. It's an immune protein that helps to work the chemotherapy, make the chemotherapy work better by both activating the immune system and kind of flicking switches in the tumor cells to make the treatment work better. And so this is an outpatient treatment. The main side effects of treatment include hair loss, low blood counts, infections, some nausea. But in general, most patients tolerate this treatment well. It's not an enjoyable treatment, obviously. Very few treatments are, but it's a manageable treatment for most patients. And in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the chance of the lymphoma going into remission is very high. And so it is usually an effective treatment for patients. And the addition of the rituximab to the CHOP chemotherapy was evaluated in several different studies going back several years and demonstrated that the cure rates of diffuse large cell lymphoma were higher when you add rituximab to the treatment. And so CHOP and rituximab, again, typically given every 3 weeks, usually for six treatments, is the standard therapy in most parts of the world for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. There are a couple of different special categories that we think of. Sometimes if the disease is bulky, meaning the lymph nodes are very large, and usually that's defined as 10 centimeters or greater, radiation treatment may be added at the end. And so sometimes that is done in some patients. Another consideration for some patients is if it is more limited stage disease, meaning stage 1 or 2, where the lymphoma is just in one area of the body or a local area of the body, sometimes the number of cycles of chemotherapy, rather than 6 cycles, it can be cut back to 3 or 4 cycles, and then radiation is given to allow less chemotherapy to be given. So there are some patients who receive either less chemotherapy with radiation or the full 6 cycles of chemotherapy with radiation, and in those cases the treatment's a little bit different, but the vast majority of patients receive CHOP rituximab every 3 weeks for 6 rounds of treatment. Now, if large cell lymphoma comes back, and I said that this is very effective at getting the patients into remission, if large cell lymphoma comes back, most patients get more treatment. These are typically more intensive treatments given in the hospital that are a little bit stronger, more effects on the blood counts and on the immune system and on infections. But these are typically regimens, and there is a regimen called DAP, D-H-A-P, a regimen called ESHAP, E-S-H-A-P, a regimen called ICE, I-C-E, or RICE, R-I-C-E, like the food. And these are combinations of drugs given in the hospital. Those are, for most patients, able to get them into remission, but not all patients, unfortunately. And often, if patients then respond to their second-line treatment, they go on to get what's called high doses of chemotherapy and autologous stem cell rescue, or autologous stem cell transplant. And that's basically a fancy way to collect one's own blood stem cells, put them in the freezer, and then give them back to the patient like a fancy blood transfusion after getting higher doses of chemotherapy in an attempt to really knock out the tumor cells for a longer period of time. And that's a more involved course of treatment, obviously. It involves more in the way of side effects and more in the way of management, but for a percentage of patients, this can vary, this can cure the disease. But when large cell lymphoma comes back, I think the message is that it is harder to treat and one needs to take a bit stronger methods in the way of methods to try to really knock it out for good. Now I'm going to just finish up here and we'll switch over to Dr. Smith in just a minute, but I just wanted to make one or two other points before I finish on this talk because I've really focused on what's the standard initial treatment and what's the standard second-line treatment should the disease come back. And we like to be optimistic in large cell lymphoma, and most patients, as we said, are cured of their disease, but there's an important number of patients that are not cured of their disease. And Dr. Smith is going to talk about in a little bit more detail what happens when the disease relapses and when it's resistant to treatment. The message I want to make is the role of clinical trials, and in my last minute of my time, I want to make the point that it's easy sometimes in large cell lymphoma to say, this is a curable lymphoma, let's be very optimistic, we'll just do the standard treatment. But there are many, many different clinical trials with new drugs that are looking at, are there ways to improve upon CHOP and rituximab, reduce the chance of the disease coming back, or more effectively deal with the disease if it does come back, or to try to minimize the side effects. And so there are many, many excellent ideas out there and excellent projects. There are other regimens, like there is a regimen called EPOC plus rituximab, which is a different way of giving the CHOP a little bit differently with an extra drug called etoposide given with it. That's being compared to R-CHOP as a potentially as a new standard treatment to try to improve upon things. There are many other clinical trials where we're adding new drugs to the R-CHOP or adding new drugs to the second or third treatment. And so I think the important message is, and I know Dr. Smith will go into this because many of the new approaches and new drugs that we're testing in patients, particularly with relapse disease, are in clinical trials right now. And I think the important message is even if you have a curable lymphoma or even if you have a situation where the prognosis is good, considering a clinical trial that could potentially further improve your chances or give you other options that might be less toxic or have fewer side effects or give you new opportunities for treatment if the standard things aren't working so well, those are all potentially out there for patients. And so it's very, very important, I think, at any stage of your lymphoma to ask your doctor, ask your healthcare team, seek out information about clinical trials because there may be some possibilities that can further improve the potential for outcomes and move things forward in the disease because all of the progress we've made in large cell lymphoma and other lymphomas comes from clinical trials. So with that, I'll stop. I'm sure we'll come back to some of these issues in the subsequent speakers and in the questions later, and I'll turn it over back to Carolyn and to Dr. Smith.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Leonard. Excellent presentation, and just for making the complex so understandable, and so thank you very much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Our next speaker is Dr. Sonali Smith, and Dr. Smith is Associate Professor, Section of Hematology Oncology, Director, Lymphoma Program, the University of Chicago. And Dr. Smith is going to address resistant disease, how research contributes to your treatment choices, tips to manage side effects, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's a delight to have Dr. Smith with us today, and I'm going to turn the program over to Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Carolyn, for that introduction, and also thank you to the LRF for asking me to join you today. I agree with Dr. Leonard. This is absolutely one of the highlights, to be able to reach out to the community of patients that are out there. So Dr. Leonard already set the stage for the disease that we're covering today, which is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And as he stated, this is a disease that carries a lot of optimism when we first meet our patients in that there is a real and significant cure rate. However, as he also alluded to, there are some patients where the disease does not respond at all or that it comes back after a period of response. And this would be in the category of what we call resistant disease. Now, when diffuse large B-cell lymphoma doesn't respond or if it comes back despite R-CHOP chemotherapy or other frontline therapy, there are still some potentially curative options. And I'm going to cover that first and then talk about what to do if transplant is not an option. So stem cell transplant, and I just want to clarify because I get this question all the time, bone marrow transplant and stem cell transplant really refer to the same procedure. Some of you may know that stem cells are cells that live in the bone marrow that by themselves are able to give us an entirely functional bone marrow that can make all the things that normally travel in our blood, such as red cells, white cells, and platelets. We used to have to harvest these cells directly from the bone marrow, which is where the word bone marrow transplant came from. But using newer techniques right now, we're actually able to trick those stem cells from leaving the bone marrow and traveling in the blood and collect them straight from the blood. So just in terms of terminology, bone marrow transplant and stem cell transplant really refer to the same process. Now, when we do know for a long period of time that diffuse large B-cell lymphoma has something called a dose response curve. In other words, the more chemotherapy you give a patient, the more lymphoma you can get rid of. However, one of the downsides to giving very high doses of chemotherapy to patients is that the bone marrow can't really tolerate it. So when we are talking about doing an autologous stem cell transplant, what we're really talking about is a fancy way of giving high-dose chemotherapy. This is a very effective procedure where patients go through three separate steps. The first step is to first get the disease back into remission, and Dr. Leonard already mentioned some of the chemotherapy recipes that we use fairly often, including RICE, RDHAP, and RESHAP. These are all fairly aggressive and intensive inpatient treatments that are given to reduce the amount of lymphoma that has either come back or resisted the initial R-CHOP chemotherapy. These are very active regimens, and a good proportion of patients actually do enter an excellent remission. And once they are in the remission, we go on to the second step, which is to collect their stem cells. Now, collecting the stem cells can either be done by giving a little bit more chemotherapy followed by G-CSF or Neupogen, or there is now a new agent called Mozobil, which can also help aid in the stem cell collection process. Once those stem cells are collected, we can freeze them for later use and then have patients come in for the high-dose chemotherapy part itself. This is the part that most people refer to as the bone marrow or stem cell transplant. There are some places that can do this as an outpatient, but I will say that the majority of places right now will have this be as an inpatient, where patients are admitted for approximately 3 weeks, where they get high doses of chemotherapy in the first few days and then get their own stem cells back as a rescue. With this procedure for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, a significant percentage of patients can go back into remission and have that remission last, and I often think about it as a second chance for cure. Now, some of you may ask about other types of transplants, and it is true that there are other transplants where you can get stem cells from other donors, for example, a brother or a sister or somebody in the National Marrow Donor Program registry. And those types of transplants have very different procedures that are associated with it. When we talk about the autologous transplant or the auto transplant, which is what we just reviewed, this is generally a very safe procedure. It's a very commonly performed procedure, and most patients can tolerate this quite well. And overall, the risk of major complications is less than 5% for most patients who go through it. When we start to consider other sources of stem cells, such as an allogeneic stem cell transplant, some of the risks go up, although there are some potential benefits to having an alternative donor as well. And I'd be happy to answer some questions about that during the question and answer period. So what I've just covered are auto and allo transplant, which are the standard options for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that is resistant to the initial chemotherapy. Now, there are also patients for whom this is not a procedure that they can go through, either because they are older or they have other medical conditions that make it very difficult for them to go through the high-dose chemotherapy. And for those patients, what we often will offer is other chemotherapy regimens with, again, the goal being to slow down and control the disease and to reenter a period of remission. For many of the patients who go through this, we will consider a clinical trial There are several different standard options that are there, but I think this is really one of the most challenging situations we have, and this is where a clinical trial is absolutely appropriate. And I'll caution, as you consider a clinical trial, I just want to bring up the fact that one of my patients had asked me about, and that was they didn't want to be a guinea pig or be part of a drug that nobody had ever seen. And while I understand that, I do want to emphasize that within lymphoma, quite a significant number of advances have been made so that the drugs that are actively being tested right now have some reasoning behind them. So it's no longer a random selection of a drug, but drugs that actually make sense to be tested in lymphoma. And I think this is a really important concept, particularly for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, where we know a little bit more about the biology today than we have in the past. Now, just in closing, I just want to touch on the last two topics. One is to discuss side effects that patients may experience, and this is actually a very broad subtopic to cover, but I will say that, you know, there are clearly side effects to all of the procedures we just talked about, whether it's chemotherapy, stem cell transplant, participation in a trial. There are many, many side effects that patients can experience both from the disease as well as from the treatment of the disease, and I think it's difficult to cover all of them. But I would say that this is where communication with your primary team is extremely important. I think we've made a lot of advances in covering the more common side effects such as nausea and vomiting and diarrhea. I think where we still struggle in terms of having one solution for patients is to address symptoms such as fatigue, loss of appetite, and depression. This is where having a very good support group, recruiting your friends and family, and assembling your support team can help. This is also a very important time to reach out to your doctors and nurses to document all the feelings that you have, all the symptoms that you have, and to be able to discuss them with your care providers. So with that, I'm going to turn the phone over back to Carolyn, and I look forward to answering questions during the next period.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Smith. That was a wonderful presentation, and just you covered a lot of very important topics with a great deal of information, but also a great deal of compassion. So thank you very much. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Excellent. Our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson. Brian is the Chief Program Officer for the Lymphoma Research Foundation. He also is the architect for today's program. He really has worked really tirelessly to make this program possible, and also in terms of identifying who our very best speakers would be. So I want to turn this program over to my really well-esteemed colleague, Brian, and he will say some words of welcome on behalf of the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Brian?
Well, thank you, Carolyn, for that gracious welcome, and welcome to everybody on the call. Thank you so much for joining us. Carolyn and Cancer Care, your team is wonderful. We really appreciate the partnership. The Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care have worked together for over 15 years to present these teleconferences to best meet the needs of people affected by lymphoma. I'd also like to really thank Drs. Leonard and Smith for taking time to be with us today and for all that they do for the foundation throughout the year and for their commitment and dedication to people affected by the disease. Lastly, I'd like to acknowledge the supporter of today's call, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing the lymphoma community with timely information on the disease. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. LRF invests millions of dollars each year to combat lymphoma and assist those whose lives have been affected by a lymphoma diagnosis. The foundation remains dedicated to identifying a cure through an aggressively funded research program and to helping members of the lymphoma community by providing comprehensive, disease-specific programs and services. To date, the organization has funded over $47.5 million in research, and more than 40,000 people participate in our programs and services each year. These programs and services for people with the disease and their loved ones include a lymphoma helpline where our professional public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for information about lymphoma and appropriate resources. On today's call, you heard a lot about clinical trials. The organization has a clinical trials information service where a member of our helpline team can assist you in your search for clinical trials. We have a national lymphoma support network, which is a one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have had similar lymphoma-related experience. We offer a variety of print and online publications and newsletters, including comprehensive disease-specific guides, disease-specific fact sheets, and informational e-newsletters. We have a variety of webcasts and podcasts that are available on our website that talk about types of lymphoma, disease-specific presentations, treatment options, and support topics. And lastly, we provide a variety of in-person patient conferences on the local, regional, and national levels. For more information about any of the programs or services the Foundation provides, please contact a member of our helpline team by calling us at 1-800-500-9976 or visiting our website, which is lymphoma.org. Again, thank you so much, Carolyn, Drs. Leonard and Smith, and the supporter of today's call. Carolyn?
Thank you so much, Brian. Just wonderful information about the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And if anyone on the call has not made contact with that organization, you really should. It's a wonderful resource for everybody on the call today. And thank you, Brian. It's just a pleasure working with you. Our next speaker is Rick Dickens, and Rick is an oncology social worker. He's clinical supervisor, blood cancers program coordinator, mind-body project coordinator at Cancer Care. And Rick is going to review with you the services that Cancer Care offers. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn, and hello to everyone on this call. For lymphoma patients and families, there are numerous issues related to treatment which can impact your quality of life. Many patients experience a watch-and-wait period, which can create anticipatory anxiety and uncertainty. Concerns about treatment, insurance, jobs, or who will take care of loved ones when you enter treatment are common questions. Changes brought on by treatment can affect sexual and body functions and challenge most people's self-image, eliciting feelings of sadness, anger, fear, and frustration. At the same time, what is happening to the patient can make family and friends feel helpless, scared, and sad as well. The good news is that at some point, the whole cancer process will become more familiar to you, and you will develop what is often called a new normal. Accepting that changes are normal during treatment can go a long way toward nurturing your body, mind, and spirit, and help you maintain an enjoyable quality of life. During these times, it is often helpful to seek the help of a social worker or other healthcare professional from organizations such as Cancer Care. At Cancer Care, along with these Connect workshops, we offer financial assistance toward transportation to treatment, as well as information about other organizations and resources. We also provide counseling by oncology social workers, regional face-to-face groups, and national telephone and online support groups for patients and those who care about them, all facilitated by oncology social workers. Most important, at Cancer Care, we provide the opportunity to speak with an oncology social worker who can help you identify people and resources in your community to address your needs as they arise. Cancer Care has been around for over 60 years. All our services are free. To many, support groups, social supports, and information to address practical and emotional issues go a long way in helping to confront the difficult challenge of cancer. Daunting as they are, with help, they are never impossible. You can visit our website at www.cancercare.org, or if you have questions, concerns, or want to speak to a social worker, you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE, which is 4673, or email us at info@cancercare.org, and a social worker will get back to you to explore how we might best help. I wish you all the best in your journey with your cancer.
Thank you so much, Rick. Excellent, and thank you for identifying all the services and also for letting people know that we are here to provide help. All of our organizations are, and we want you to really take advantage of those services. And now we have time for questions. I'm going to ask Janitha to bring all of our speakers on board, and we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. If we don't get to take your question, please call either Cancer Care or the Lymphoma Research Foundation at the end of the call if you have a specific question, and we'd be happy to address your questions. And I'll say more about that at the end of the call as well. But right now, Janitha, could you explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, and let's see if we can take all of them if we can.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch tone telephone. If your question has been answered, or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question is from Harold R. Your question, please.
Yes. Dr. Leonard said that R-CHOP was a choice for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Now, I've had R-CHOP previously when I was not in this situation. I had indolent, but it wasn't diffuse large B-cell. Now, does that mean I am not eligible for R-CHOP again?
Excellent question, Harold. Thank you. I'm going to ask Dr. Leonard if you could address that question, Dr. Leonard, in a general way, and then Harold can go back to his treating healthcare team.
That's a great question, and so the issue is that many people with diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma have, from the beginning, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, but some people have indolent lymphoma, such as follicular lymphoma or some of the other types of indolent lymphoma, that transform or change into diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And so that's someone who is in a different situation in that they've had a period of time of one type of lymphoma and now it's changed into diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So in that situation, it depends on the overall, so that's called a transformation. So patients with indolent lymphoma, we often consider the issue of transformation. Generally, how we approach that depends on a very individual situation. So it's very hard to generalize and say we always do it this way or we always do it that way because it depends on many different factors. If the patient has not had treatment before, typically such a patient, say, with indolent lymphoma who was on watch and wait or it had some gentler treatment like rituximab alone, that patient would go on to get R-CHOP if they had a transformation, just like a patient who had a brand new diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. However, one of the drugs in R-CHOP, the H, is also called adriamycin or doxorubicin. That is a drug that has effects on the heart. And over time, with multiple doses of that drug, the heart function in some patients can go low. And there is generally a gray area, but to some degree a limitation on how many doses or how many cycles of the adriamycin one can give. Why is that important? Well, if you've had a full course of 6 rounds of R-CHOP for indolent lymphoma, which is sometimes done, and then now you have an aggressive lymphoma, you've already received several doses of the adriamycin or the doxorubicin, and that may put one into the territory where the risk, if many more doses are given of that drug, heart problems could emerge. And so sometimes we try to get away with a few more rounds of the R-CHOP. Often we'll change to other drugs. Some of the other drugs can be, in some cases, the drugs like Dr. Smith mentioned, the regimens like RICE or ESHAP or DAP, or there are some other choices that don't include that drug, the doxorubicin. So there's not one absolute answer, but I think it's a very important question, in particular for the people with indolent lymphoma who subsequently develop a diffuse large cell lymphoma, otherwise termed transformation.
Thank you very much. I hope that's helpful to you, Harold. And our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Molly K. Your question, please.
I had lymphoma 11 years ago, and it reoccurred now this winter. At the time, I underwent CHOP, which I was told I cannot have it again. I think the age has to do with it. I'm 88, but otherwise in good health. And I got 3 treatments, and I don't know exactly which ones. And the first PET scan was negative. It concentrated in the spleen at the time. But I'm going to have another PET scan. The question is, I really don't know exactly which treatments I get. I get them outpatients. And then I get this immune to build up my immune system injection, which is a part of my blood that they took. I would like to know what entails in that, usually in that injection. And then what are my chances to be well?
Your question?
Yes, I wanted to know, I'm very weak. Will this persist? That's my only complaint. Otherwise, I manage to do everything I can. I get only shortness of breath if I do any physical exertion to a certain extent. I don't mean just functioning or walking or something like that.
Okay. Well, excellent question, and I'm going to ask Dr. Smith if you would address that in a general way to help Molly and others on the call who may have similar concerns. And
yeah.
then Molly, we do very much recommend that we'll try to give you also some suggestions in terms of working with your healthcare team so you can get some more information as well.
Okay.
Dr. Smith?
Certainly. So, you know, as Dr. Leonard was just saying, once somebody has received the CHOP or R-CHOP chemotherapy, when the same lymphoma comes back, we do have to change the type of treatment that we use so we don't have the particular medication that can damage the heart. There are several outpatient treatments that are currently available for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that has come back. Some of them use a drug called gemcitabine, and so there's a couple of different recipes with gemcitabine that have been very effective in controlling the disease. I think it's really important for not just for Molly, but also for everybody else on the call to have a good record of exactly what they're receiving. And I think this is important both when you're talking to your physicians and also for your own family and your understanding of what you're receiving. In terms of an immune booster, the most common medication that we use to help protect our patients against infection is something called Neupogen, or G-CSF. And this is a booster shot, if you will, that raises the white count and helps decrease the chance that our patients will have infections that are serious or life-threatening. And this is given usually as an injection underneath the skin. There's two different compounds that are currently available. One is Neupogen, which has to be given every day following treatment. And then there's Neulasta, which is Neupogen that lasts. And that's typically given just as a single dose after each chemotherapy treatment. But those are all there to help protect you from the treatment. In terms of effectiveness, I think that all of the treatments that we have for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that's come back and for patients who are not going to be going through a stem cell transplant, the real goal is to control the disease for as long as we can. And if one treatment doesn't work, there are other options that can be tried. But again, this is a discussion that you have to have with your physician, because it does get more and more difficult to tolerate repeated lines of treatment at that point.
Well, thank you. And Rick, do you want to comment just on the kind of challenges that people often have and just the doctor-patient communication in terms of getting the information? Because sometimes it's hard information to understand.
Well, and definitely, thank you, Carolyn. Definitely reaching out to organizations like Cancer Care is very helpful, because a lot of times people think that they're asking the questions that they want answers to, or they're expressing themselves right, and the reality that they're not. And talking to somebody else, helping them frame the question, is very helpful. And also because there's a lot of underlying content in terms of a lot of information related to cancer. Some people are information seekers, as Carolyn says, and other people really can easily get overwhelmed by information. So while doctor-patient communication is very helpful, I do find over the years that a lot of times before, you might call somebody at Cancer Care and just explore what are the questions you're struggling with, and a social worker can really help you identify how best to express your concerns, how to present them to the doctor, oftentimes having a notepad at home when questions do arise, recording them, but prioritizing what the questions are. But again, how best to express it to the doctor and or the healthcare team. Many times doctors themselves are very busy with many patients, but most oncologists work in teams with social workers and nurses who are very knowledgeable, and many people I work with build a really wonderful working relationship with the nurse or social worker to get those answers to the questions that arise periodically.
Thank you. And Molly, I'm going to call you after the call, if that's okay, as well, just because I'm going to go over some things, because I think you raise a very important point. Sometimes it's really hard to just retain all that information that you're hearing and what your exact treatments are. Dr. Lena, do you have any suggestions also for patients just in your practice, someone who might have just how do they, like not knowing all the different treatments that they have had just historically, are there any methods that you use to help patients with that?
Well, I think it's a good idea for patients as they go through their treatment journey to try to keep records of things. Most physicians and most practices where patients are getting treated have some form of what's termed a chemotherapy record, which may be just a flow sheet that lists the treatments that a patient has had, the doses, the dates of the treatments, et cetera, the number of treatments. And that's something that, one way or another, I mean, it may be hard for you as a patient to interpret what all the abbreviations mean and so on, but if you were going to, let's say, another doctor to get an opinion or something like that, it's good to have handy. Many practices will give you a summary of all of your treatments, even just the details of that. And I think it's a good idea for patients to keep a folder of some of their key issues, I would say, things like pathology reports, scan reports, and treatment records as best you can. It's good to have in mind because you never know when they're going to be helpful or when they're going to be very relevant, and you'll have to make a quick decision, and needing that information will be helpful.
Thank you very much. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mary M. Your question, please.
Yes. My husband has mantle cell lymphoma, which is a pretty rare lymphoma, and he just finished his first 4 cycles of treatment and is now considered in first remission. And I wondered what your opinion was of an auto transplant in first remission to improve overall survival with MCL as a possible cure.
Thank you. Excellent question. I'm going to ask Dr. Lennon if you would just address that in a general way, and then, of course, we'll hope you'll go back to your treating healthcare team with that. Dr. Lennon?
So mantle cell lymphoma is an uncommon, less common subtype of lymphoma than diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. It is a lymphoma that typically comes back at some point. So it tends to respond to the treatment, and the patient goes in remission. But less commonly, does it go away and never come back? More commonly, we hope it's going to be many years later, but sometimes it's sooner than that. It does tend to come back at some point in time, and there's a lot of debate about how to treat mantle cell lymphoma, and I have to say that our group at Cornell, where I work, we tend to be more conservative, meaning that we tend to do less of the stronger treatments, less of the stem cell transplants that you allude to, and so on. But there are good colleagues of mine, and Dr. Smith, not to put words in her mouth, may be someone who treats this a little bit more aggressively with the stem cell transplants and other things. So typically in mantle cell lymphoma, one gets a treatment course of one form or another. It can be the CHOP and rituximab, which we've talked about for the large cell lymphoma. It can be other chemotherapy regimens. Sometimes it's a stronger regimen called HyperCVAD, which is a more intensive version of the CHOP. And then the question comes up, do you, unlike in large cell lymphoma where we don't give further treatment unless the disease comes back, in mantle cell lymphoma, sometimes people do additional treatment to try to keep it away longer. And that can range from just observing and monitoring the patient to giving rituximab or rituxan as a maintenance treatment to giving stronger chemotherapy like the stem cell transplant that we talked about. And in general, giving more treatment in mantle cell lymphoma can keep people in remission longer. It's not to say, however, that we know that it actually cures the disease. And I would say that for most patients, more treatment generally in mantle cell lymphoma, and again, the distinctions here are very, very important. I don't want anybody to walk away confused. In mantle cell lymphoma, I think it is uncommon that we actually cure it where it never comes back. But there are people who can have very long remissions to the point that we are thinking about the possibility of doing that and obviously hoping for that. Now, whether or not those treatments which keep you in remission longer actually make you live longer in mantle cell lymphoma is a debatable issue, and it's a complicated sort of discussion. By contrast, in large cell lymphoma, which is a more common type of lymphoma, typically you get your first line of treatment, your first type of treatment, and the hope is that you can stop there. There's not a lot of evidence that more treatment, if the disease has gone into remission with the first line of treatment. In large cell, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, there's not a lot of evidence that you need to do more treatment unless the disease comes back.
Thank you. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sarah S. Your question, please.
My question is, at what point do you consider yourself cured? Like, let's say, is it after 5 years, 10 years of remission, or what, not, you know, what basic time period can you then say I'm free of it?
I'd like to give that excellent question, Sarah. I know it's probably on many people's mind. I'm going to ask Dr. Smith if you would address that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we usually discuss with our patients is that the highest risk of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma coming back after the initial R-CHOP type of chemotherapy is usually within the first 2 to 3 years. After 3 years, the chance of it coming back goes down quite a bit to a very low level, and after 5 years, essentially, patients have a higher chance of having actually a second lymphoma than to have their own lymphoma come back. Not to say that it never happens, but 5 years is our arbitrary cutoff point where we actually use the word cure.
Thank you. I guess there was a question that came in from someone online in terms of how often should people be having scans in terms of follow-up care, and lots of concern about just the exposure to scans. Dr. Smith, would you address that as well?
Sure. So I think that's probably one of the most important questions right now, which is, once somebody's in remission, how do we monitor them to see if the disease is coming back? And I would say that this is an area that's kind of in flux right now, because we are all very aware, both patients and doctors, that we don't want to overexpose our patients to radiation that they don't need. In the past, I mean, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we used to do CT scans every 3 to 4 months for the first 2 years, and then every 6 months until somebody is 5 years out. And I would say that that is changing. And I have many colleagues, and myself included, where we will perhaps do scans every 4 months for the first year and then very quickly go to a 6-month basis. I don't think there are any standards out there for how often to check these, but I will say that the frequency is going down. If I may, I'm just going to add one other element to that question, which is, what is the best way to follow patients, CT scans, PET scans, or both? And again, this is something that's not always agreed upon. Generally, PET scans are not recommended as a follow-up screening tool because there are a high number of false positives. So CT scans are usually what's performed. And again, the frequency, I think, is in flux. But in my practice, we do it fairly aggressively for the first year or so and then slow down very quickly.
Thank you. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Wendy W. Your question, please.
Okay. Hi. I was recently diagnosed with a large diffuse B-cell lymphoma. I went through 2 rounds of R-CHOP, and then they found through further testing, through pathological tests, that I have a component of Burkitt's lymphoma also, which changed me to an unclassified form of large B-cell lymphoma. I'm not classified as just, yeah. It came back as unclassified because I had this component of Burkitt's. And then they changed my therapy to EPOC-R. How would you treat someone with unclassified lymphoma?
Excellent. Thank you for that question. Dr. Lennon, could you address that in a general way?
Sure. So as I mentioned, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is about 30% of patients with lymphoma. There is another type of aggressive lymphoma called Burkitt's lymphoma, which is much less common, perhaps 1 to 2% of patients with lymphoma. And Burkitt's lymphoma is another aggressive, curable lymphoma, but it generally needs stronger treatment and slightly different treatment than R-CHOP. So those are two different types of aggressive lymphoma. And one of the things about lymphoma is that there are so many different types that we're learning that as time goes on, we want to even have more types, which makes it more confusing, but the concept being that we pick the right treatment for the right patient and rather than treating everybody the same way. So we have Burkitt's lymphoma on the one hand, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma on another hand, and the aggressive lymphomas. What has come out in recent years is that there's a third type in this spectrum, which is intermediate or in between Burkitt's and the large cell. And so it's kind of in between the two. And so how you treat such a patient, we don't honestly know the answer because it's an uncommon situation. And sometimes we would treat such patients with CHOP and Rituxan, like it's diffuse large cell lymphoma. sometimes we might say, well, let's use the stronger treatment since this is closer in the direction of Burkitt's lymphoma. Why don't we use the stronger treatment like Burkitt's lymphoma, which would also cover the diffuse large cell lymphoma? This is a debatable issue. We don't have big studies so far where we can say we've taken hundreds of patients and half treated them one way and half another way and see which is better. So we're kind of feeling our way through the best way to do it. And so different factors in the patient, including their age and their overall situation, may influence how we approach this. Now, EPOC is one of the other regimens that is being studied in diffuse large cell lymphoma. It adds another drug called etoposide to the treatment, and it gives the medicines instead of all in one day, it spreads it out over 4 to 5 days. This is a regimen that in some small studies can work both for the large cell lymphoma, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and the Burkitt's lymphoma. And so some doctors are saying since that may cover both of these two types of lymphoma, it may also cover the in-between type of lymphoma, which sounds like is what you're dealing with. So it's a way to cover both bases with one approach. And that is a reasonable way to do it. I can't tell you that it's the best way for you to do it, but it's an approach that some doctors and some groups use in the situation that you described. Now, I will mention that there are other approaches that people are doing, and there are clinical trials in different subtypes of lymphoma including diffuse large cell lymphoma, where we're adding on new drugs to the CHOP and rituximab treatment to try to make it work better. And so that's another twist on the thing. The EPOC is giving the same drugs largely in a different way, but there are other clinical trials which are adding another drug on top of the CHOP and rituximab to try to improve things there. So different strategies to go after diffuse large cell lymphoma as well as those other types that are somewhat similar but a little bit different.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Maria L. Your question, please.
Hi. Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely, Maria. Yes.
Okay. My question is about the allogeneic stem cell transplant, receiving someone else's stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already done an autologous stem cell transplant, and I'm just wondering how often that patients that have bad lymphomas, poor risk lymphomas, are getting the allo instead of the auto, or both.
That's a great question. What are
the risks?
Thank you very much. Great question. I'm going to ask Dr. Smith if you would address that question, please.
Thanks very much for that question. This is a very important question. For patients who have either already gone through an autologous stem cell transplant and it hasn't worked, if they are still eligible from a physical perspective to go through an allogeneic stem cell transplant, we will often consider this. So this is done, fairly routinely for patients who are appropriate to go through an allo transplant. And I'm being a little cautious with my words because it's not really based on age. It's really based on the fitness of the patient, whether or not the disease can be controlled, and whether or not they have a good donor. And if those three criteria are met, then yes, allogeneic stem cell transplant is an appropriate next step for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Now, you asked about the risks, and when you use stem cells from somebody else, the risks and potential benefits of the transplant are very different than from an autologous stem cell transplant. So with an allogeneic stem cell transplant, the upside is that the new stem cells that you get are free of lymphoma. That's very important. They also have not been exposed to chemotherapy, so they're presumably healthier stem cells. And then the third issue is that when you get those new stem cells, they not only give you a new bone marrow, but they also give you a new immune system, so to speak, which can recognize cancer cells as not belonging and get rid of them. And we call that phenomenon graft versus lymphoma effect, and it's quite powerful. And there are some cures that can be obtained when you undergo an allogeneic stem cell transplant. The downside, however, is that in order for your body to accept the new stem cells, you have to take anti-rejection medications that knock down your own immune system. So that can lead you or put you at a higher risk for life-threatening infections, and there's many medications that need to be taken to help prevent or minimize the risk of infection. But infection is still a major issue when you go through an allogeneic stem cell transplant. The second potential downside is that when these new stem cells give you a new immune system, not only do they recognize the lymphoma as not belonging, but they can recognize some of your normal organs as not belonging. And when they attack your normal organs, such as your skin, your liver, or your gut, we call that graft versus host disease. And graft versus host disease can sometimes be a very challenging disease to manage, and again requires medications like steroids, which can again knock down your immune system. So I think, you know, when you consider an allogeneic stem cell transplant, there are certainly some very important benefits, but they come with some risks, and this is something that's very important to discuss in your specific case with your physicians as to the best estimate of the risk-benefit profile for you.
Caroline, can I just add a point?
Yeah. Sure.
So this is Dr. Leonard. So I think it's very important that stem cell transplants are a very powerful and important tool for some patients with lymphoma, but I just want to make the point that most patients with lymphoma never need or never get a stem cell transplant. If a lymphoma patient needs a stem cell transplant, most of those are the autologous, meaning from yourself. Relatively few are from someone else, which are a little bit more challenging to do. And this question comes up because people hear about stem cell transplants, and I just want to finish this comment with the point that whether or not a patient needs a stem cell transplant, which type or when to do it, is a very, very individualized thing that one needs to talk about with their doctor, because for certain types of patients, it'll never be necessary. For other types of patients, it might be necessary, and in others, there's a lot of discussion that goes around because it's something that is very high on the list. And so it's a very, very individualized thing, and the details of the answers to the questions really are something that one needs to either see a doctor or a specialist in stem cell transplants within those that take care of lymphoma patients.
Excellent. I want to thank you very much. I want to thank our speakers. This has been an extraordinary call, and just wonderful speakers, and all of you who have asked such wonderful questions by queuing up, and those of you who have been listening as well. I want to remind you this is a one-hour workshop, and that we recognize in planning this program that you all have needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. We also do not want anyone to leave this call feeling that you are alone in coping with large B-cell, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma or cancer. We want you to now know that you're part of a community of support. And just so you now, again, have these numbers to call, I want you to feel comfortable calling the Lymphoma Research Foundation at 1-800-500-9976 or Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673. All of our staff are here to help you and to address your concerns. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. That concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.